And the Buddha teaches us that suffering arises from defilement. The end of suffering arises through virtue. If we take that as our basic premise, then we have four challenges in front of us. Firstly, given that we don't want to suffer, given that we want to be happy, realize supreme happiness, we face the challenge of protecting the mind from as yet unarisen defilements, and the challenge of dealing effectively with defilements that have already arisen in the mind. We face the challenge of introducing into the mind those wholesome dhammas, those virtues that are not there yet, and of taking care of cultivating, of bringing those wholesome dhammas, those virtues that have already appeared in the mind, to take them to maturity, fruition. So we, as Buddhists, we see life, spiritual life, compared of facing up to these four challenges, preventing the arising of unwholesome dhammas, dealing effectively with unwholesome dhammas, introducing into the mind wholesome dhammas and cultivating them and bringing them to maturity. But how to do that? So formal meditation, Buddhist meditation practice, is the activity, unique activity, which is designed in such a way that we can train ourselves, learn how to face up to all four of these challenges. So we put our mind onto meditation object, such as the breath, and the first challenge appears. How do we create, sustain a relationship between the mind and the meditation object in such a way that as yet unarisen unwholesome dhammas or defilements will not arise? What are the causes and conditions for that to occur? Some of the suggestions that I've offered in the past couple of few days. We begin with chanda or dhamma chanda, thinking, reflecting in such a way that we feel a strong commitment to practice. We feel enthusiasm, interest. So the presence of chanta guards against gaining ideas in meditation, cravings to experience, to become, to get, to gain something or other. So we have aspiration, we have a path to follow, But by rousing chanda, we keep our mind on the process itself rather than obsessing with the goal. We are observers. We observe what happens. We observe the role of contentment, finding contentment with a single breath. We don't need a lot of things, a lot of stuff. The mindfulness of the breath, what could be more simple? A physical process which defines our life. You can say life is the breath. It's the most ordinary and the most profound aspect of our lives. We're just turning to something that's already there. And with contentment, content with an inhalation, content with an exhalation, then the likelihood of the mind becoming bored and seeking for some small pleasures in memory and imagination are much reduced. When the defilements do arise, when we don't catch them quickly enough, our first recourse is to simply re-establish our connection with our meditation object, reminding ourselves that the defilement is a defilement, it's a dead end. Following defilement means that we will never know the end of suffering, because suffering is caused by defilement. So coming face to face with defilements in practice, it's not all a bad thing. We're learning how they work. They learn the hold they have over our minds. We're learning why it is that we find them so fascinating, so compelling. And we learn how to put them down and how it feels. Compare the feeling of being caught up in a defilement and being free of a defilement. Remember that. So with a weak defilement, simply waking up to what you're trying to do, recognizing that you've forgotten, re-establish attention. That can often be sufficient. But if there is a chronic hindrance or defilement coming up again and again and again, whether it's sensual desire or ill will or sloth and torpor, agitation, then we may need to put down the the breath for a while and apply a remedy to the chronic defilement. So in the case of sensual, worldly fascination, obsession, then we contemplate a super nimitta, could be the bones, the skeleton, could be the teeth, the skin, we can choose from within the 32 parts of the body, and we spend time focusing, meditating, contemplating that body part so that it's right there when we need it. It's within arm's reach, as it were. And we can apply it to deal with that particular problem and then return to the breath. In the case of ill will and negativity, it's to oneself, one's surroundings, people around us, whatever, there's focus. We develop its opposite, loving kindness, metta. So we apply metta as a specific antidote to ill will. With sloth, torpor, then there are many different means to deal with this, keeping a close watch on posture, maintaining a good posture, being careful not to grasp onto the relaxation that arises as the mind lets go of thinking to a certain degree. If we just settle back into that pleasant, fuzzy feeling of relaxation and absence of agitation, then we'll fall asleep easily. So keeping that strong sense of wakefulness, observation, interest in the practice and in the mind. But if the dullness and sleepiness does arise, then we can use the method I mentioned the other day. Just feel the breath throughout the body, from the tip of the top of the head to tips of the toes, just feel the breath, the energy in every part of the body, in the head, the face, the neck, shoulders, arms, hands, fingers, chest, abdomen, back, spine, torso, the bottom, the legs, the knees, the shins, the calves, the ankles, the feet, the toes, and just feel the breath as light. So call up the perception of light. We all know what light looks like, this bright, warm light, full of energy, just feeling it flood through the body with the in-breath, and then radiate it outwards with the out-breath. So you're like a powerhouse of light. If this still is not working, you can try other things, coarser things like opening your eyes, pulling your earlobes, or getting up, changing posture, do some walking meditation. Nighttime, go out and look up at the stars. Try different things. Ajahn Chah would suggest walking backwards, doing walking meditation backwards, to overcome that sleepiness. With agitation, the mind is it's just a tsunami of thought, taking everything along with it. Cars and furniture and everything sort of swept along with the tsunami of thought. Don't panic. And look at the thought. Allow the thinking, but without any interest in it. Just turning on the light of awareness. And without that consent to thought, that indulgence in thought, that, and with the light of awareness, then the thought will usually disappear. We can use other methods that I've mentioned. For example, slowing the thought down, consciously slowing the thought down. Another method I mentioned was imagining the words of the thought, if it's a verbal thought, as words written on water, and I see them dissolve. Can also take the last word of the thought as you become aware of a thought, an agitated thought. Take the last word and repeat it again and again and again. Or the last sentence, the last phrase. The underlying idea for this strategy of dealing with agitated thought is that the mind lets go of the thought voluntarily. It becomes bored with it. So if you, there's a thought in your mind, you catch it, and just the last few words, now you repeat, and there comes a point where you become bored and you put it down. So you return to your breath voluntarily. With doubt, simply seeing doubt, skeptical doubt, as doubt. When we're doubting, the voice of doubt in our minds sounds like the voice of wisdom. And we don't believe it. See a doubt as a doubt. Set yourself a path and give yourself a time. Might be with a meditation object, 3 months, 6 months, a year, and say, come what may, I'm going to apply myself to this practice. And only after the agreed time will I evaluate or consider changing. But you have to bear with the ups and downs and the thicks and thins and the uncertainty and the difficulties and making aditanas or making vows will help with that. So the Buddha says that the first hindrance is like being in debt. Freeing yourself from it is being free from debt. Ill will is like having a fever. Being free from it is like recovering from a fever. Sloth and torpor is like being in prison. Letting go of it is like being released from prison. Agitation is like being a slave. Free from it's like freedom from slavery. Skeptical doubts like being lost in a lonely place and being free of doubt. It's like finding the path home. So samadhi begins where the hindrances end. This is the first job, to protect against defilements as much as possible and to deal effectively, skillfully with those that arise. We're introducing into the mind these qualities of chanda, of contentment, of mindfulness, of clear comprehension, of effort, and so on. Then as we practice and the hindrances fall away, the jhana factors, the bhujangas, enlightenment factors start to appear in the mind, we recognize them and we feed them, we care for them. And so in meditation we are applying the four right efforts as a means of facing up to the four challenges, the four dilemmas that we see as Buddhists that must be resolved if we are to find liberation.